Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and as always, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. That we come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., Wednesdays at 9 a.m., and our special edition of Tell Me Your Story, 9 a.m. on Wednesdays, but we also are on at 8 a.m. Monday through Friday. You get nine chances to listen, nine opportunities, I should say. With nine different guests, and we try to keep it that way without repeating anybody during the week. But of course, we podcast these programs on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, so many other locations on the internet, as well as YouTube, where you can watch these conversations. And hope you'll subscribe and also click on the notification so that when I do post a new conversation, you will be notified and you'll be able to tune in. We hope that you'll do that. We also ask that if you can, and again, this is just an ask. I have been challenged by some folks saying, well, what are you doing? What are you asking for money for? I said, well, you know, it takes, unfortunately, in our world, it takes coins to keep things going. And I know about the whole render unto Caesar what is Caesar and unto God what is God. Well, I'm doing the best I can on that one. And so I hope that if you can support us financially, we have a PayPal account. It is there for your security as well as ours. And you can put in my email address, richard@richarddugan.com, when they ask for it. And we'll gratefully appreciate all support, including energetic support. We also ask that you take time during this, the decade of perfect vision, and spend some time going within and listening to that still small voice. Our guest today is going to be talking with us about a very interesting subject that I think you're going to find fascinating. At least I know I am, because it's a subject that I have followed, especially with my wife, but even more so in regards to just the way in which we have a more, I say, metaphysical and spiritual hierarchy. I hope that, we'll get explanations from that. All right, my guest today is going to be sharing with us about her latest book. It's called Goddess, and her name is Anadeya Judith. And I want to welcome you to our program today. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Richard. Delighted to speak today.
The subject is somewhat challenging for some folks, because it seems as though the whole aspect of the masculine and feminine in the more material world, shall we say, is an effort on the part of the women of the world to take over. And it has been explained to me over and over again, and I couldn't agree with you more. Hey, I grew up in a household where the males were outnumbered 5-3. but the thought is that, oh, they want to take over. And I've learned that, no, that isn't it. It's sort of along the lines, but not quite this. And help me along there here if you can. Of the Equal Rights Amendment, if you will, that women and the feminine energy in particular just want equal, equitable opportunity. At the same time, I say that I also recognize, too, that actually women have always, and this is no reflection on my sisters or my mother, they were very, shall we say, loving and supportive in their feminine majority, shall we say. But it's one of those things where this was something that I remember from biology, that when we come into this world, and I'm talking about, and I don't know how long it lasts, but from the moment of conception, every single human being is female. And it's not until the DNA kicks in, the chromosomes kick in, to make the determination that you're going to, the physical body is going to be male and female. And I find that fascinating. What's the, from your perspective, and we'll dive into, of course, your book here, Goddess. From your perspective, what does that mean?
That the chromosomes divide after the egg is fertilized?
Why is it that we start out, all of us, every human being starts out as a female?
Well, we all came from the mother. You know, that is that no matter how you were born, no matter what kind of mother you had, whether you were adopted because your mother had to give you up, whatever the reasons, we all came from the mother. So that is our origin. And if we look back at humanity's history and we go back to the prehistoric times, and history really is his story, that was the onset of writing. Coincided with the onset of patriarchy. But if we look back before that, everyone worshiped a goddess. She was the earth. She was the mother. She was nature. She was everything. And as she evolved into gods and goddesses. So there was masculine and feminine. It was not a matriarchy. It was a partnership society where men and women worked together and saw the divine in each other and in all things. And, you know, you mentioned about, you know, equal rights, and of course, the Equal Rights Amendment, which was proposed almost 100 years ago, still has not been passed. But it's not just about women fighting for their rights. That has been a wave of feminism that started in the 60s and is very important. But it's about the feminine values contributing to the public conversation. The conversation that occurs within politics, the conversation that occurs within education, within medicine, within economics, within all the institutions we have, the feminine contribution of compassion, of connection and working together in collaboration rather than competition, the feminine contribution of love, of beauty. You know, of building a world with beauty, that's something the feminine brings in that the masculine has been more utilitarian. Let's get this done. Let's go for efficiency. But what about beauty? What about aesthetics? That's some of the feminine. So we're missing that from our world. So it's not just about elevating women. It's about bringing to women and men the feminine contribution.
And of course, even when the DNA and the chromosomes make the determination, or however that happens, and the individual comes out as a male, there is still the feminine aspect. You know, I've heard, you know, the phrase, you know, I need to get in touch with my feminine side. And a lot of guys go, I have no feminine side. I'm a man. I'm a man's man. I'm tough and strong and so forth and so on.
Well, masculinity has almost been defined by anything that's not feminine. And in mainstream culture, sometimes the worst insult to a man is that he has feminine characteristics, you know? And so that's all about the denial of the feminine in both women and men.
We're talking with our very special guest, the author of Goddess, Anadea Judith. Where does the name Anadea come from? What does it mean?
Well, it actually means one who serves the goddess. And I have a story that I was on my way to a wedding many 50 some odd years ago. And the woman's name was Lori Bland. And I was wondering whether she was going to change her name. If I had a last name like Bland, I would change it. And I was thinking about this whole process of how women change their name to their husbands. And so our last names reflect the patriarchal line of the family, not the mother line. And I thought, well, what could we do differently? And I thought, well, women could take their first name, Judith or Barbara or Elizabeth or Carol, and move it to their last name and then create something that means something to them for a first name. My middle name was Anne, and Dea is Greek or Roman for goddess. And so Anodea, one who serves the goddess, is what it means to me.
That's beautiful. I also find it interesting, and I'm in that crowd strangely enough, that has basically kind of had it up to here with a lot of the stereotypes. When it comes to relationships, the games that are played in relationships on both parts, it's not, you know, being anything other than observing that it just seems as though enough already. I'm why can't we just be straight with people? Why can't we just, you know, it almost comes down to the guy in relationship, he recognizes she's upset and goes to ask, is something, what's bothering you?
Mm-hmm.
And the response is, in a manner of speaking, well, wouldn't you like to know? Once you figure it out, you know, it's like,
well, that's what? A horrible thing to say,
you know, and it's like, why can't you just tell me straight out what's going on? And the stereotypical social or social, I guess you might call them norms. There's a line in a country song that where this couple is having a rough time, and he's singing about how they're, you know, going through all of this, and basically the line in there is, and you think, I paraphrase, you think that a ring is going to fix all of the problems that we have? As if a ring and a ceremony and a trip to Paris and another child and whatever it is that, you know, it seems as though there's this, we don't seem to be happy with who we are and where we are, whether we're male or female.
Well, I agree. And I think the system itself of being so regimented into what is male and what is female and having these stereotypes, it doesn't really work for anyone. It doesn't work for the men. It doesn't work for the women. And stereotypes are what happens to archetypes when we flatten them. The archetypes of our ancient mythology and the stories that used to bind a society together were whole archetypes. They had light and shadow. They had male and female characteristics. They represented something. They had lives. They had feelings. They had, you know, engagements and stories that they told of how they interacted. But when we reduce it to a stereotype, whether that's the man in the gray flannel suit carrying a briefcase to work or the woman on the billboard in the black sexy dress, those are stereotypes. They have no dimension. They're flat. And one thing that the goddess religion brought was a deep, a richness of mythology and archetypes that have more dimension and allow us to relate to them from a more whole place. And I think what you're talking about in relationship, this is what we want to grow out of. We want to grow into more mature relationships where the men are treated like God and the women are treated like a goddess. And then we're working with the whole deck and we can actually interact and create a new world and give birth to something.
Mm. I would have to say that I watched my sisters and my mother to a lesser degree as they transformed, as they grew. And you talk about this in your book, and I'm familiar with these phases. And even have a great deal of, shall we say, a great deal of respect, of reverence, if you will, for the fourth phase, often referred to as the old crone. but there's maiden, mother, queen, and crone. And my mother today, a matter of fact, this year, 2024, will be 90 in September. My father passed away last year at the age of 91. And first of all, what would be the equivalent on the male side of the crone?
The elder.
Elder.
It's okay. A youth, father, and elder. And the, you know, correspondence to the queen would be the king.
Yeah. I have to say that As I have watched both of my parents grow, it's been fascinating for my experience of them to have changed. For the longest time, of course, they were parents, mother and father, taking care and so forth. But as I entered into my first and then second marriage, which, by the way, is my last. I have no intention ever. I'm going to do everything I can. I said this following the divorce that I would do everything I could to make the second one work, because going through what I went through was just too much. And mine was nothing but comparison to what a lot of other people go through. But one of the things that I experienced with my parents was that they transformed from parents to very, very good friends. We would go over to their house on a Sunday afternoon, for example, and maybe have lunch and then sit around in the living room and talking about these kinds of things, like what you and I are talking about. And it was so cool. My father was more reserved. He was more private with his spirituality and so forth, but he was still chiming in with his observations as well. And I have to wonder sometimes, when a parent passes, as my father did, I'm able to say that there was nothing left unsaid, which is very rare for a lot of folks. The night before his passing, we were on the phone with him, video phone. I wish I'd recorded it now, but he told me how proud he was of both my wife and I. And that he loved us and so forth, and we reciprocated in kind. And I just think about how he, as the elder, as I look back now, shared so much. And my mother is the same way. I mean, she's still with us, of course. When you start looking at these archetypes, and I've heard it said that mythology is only, I'm just going to use a figure, it's only half make believe, so to speak. It's only half fiction. There is truth in there. Talk to us about the truth, if you will, the reality of the goddess in our world, civilizations, and society.
Well, the goddess represents the phenomenal world. And we have to say, this is a phenomenal world that we live in. It is phenomenal in every aspect. And she represents the spring coming out right now in the Northern Hemisphere. I'm looking outside my window at the leaves just in little buds about ready to burst. She's that life force. And in the mythology, there are stories about how she was treated and what was the result. For example, the Greek goddess Demeter was the goddess of the grain. She was the goddess of the harvest, the agricultural goddess, which harkens back to really an ancient earth mother. And when her daughter, Kore, who was the spring maiden, was abducted into the underworld, well, what do you know? The crops failed, the animals were sickly, people started starving. And not only that, Hades, who had taken over the underworld, had no way to rebirth the souls that were down there. And it got very crowded because he had no woman to give birth and bring those souls back to another lifetime. And so they had to do something about it. And it's a long story, but at one point, when the situation gets really bad, Demeter says, build me a temple and reestablish my rights. And this was a time when some of the goddess temples were getting destroyed and some of the goddess religion was getting dominated. And by reestablishing my rights, you restore an order, a holy order. I call it the holy order of Mother Earth, which is home. That is the order of our home. So, in some mythologies, we talk about the fall. You know, patriarchal religions talk about the fall. That's where humanity went wrong. I don't think it was the fall. I think it was the separation from the earth. And we need to fall back down to the earth. It was the denigration of the earth, the denigration of the body, of the material world. This is a beautiful world we were given. It's not an innate bunch of matter to manipulate. It is something to celebrate that gives us life. So how does that affect us today? We have an environmental crisis. We have denied the goddess. We've denied the body. We have health crises. You know, people aren't healthy. They're sick. And, you know, we have health insurance crises and we had the pandemic. You know, we have things that come out of denying this feminine aspect of the polarity. Nothing wrong with the masculine. It's holy. It's grand. It serves. But it's not, it's without a partner. And we've been growing up in a broken home. You talk about your family, you know, and the family is an important unit, but we've been growing up in a cultural broken home, raised by a father with no mother, no knowledge that there ever was a mother, and the father doesn't even date.
Yeah. Do you think, from your perspective, that we need to go back to certain aspects of, let's just say, of family structure? Because I'm hearing this an awful lot from some circles, and understand I was born and raised Catholic. I went to work in the 80s and early 90s for a Christian radio station. And I was constantly hearing, not when I was growing up, but at that station, we need to go back to the way it was, you know, in the 50s and so forth. And I'm thinking, well, there are a lot of people in the 50s that didn't care much for the way they were treated.
That's right.
Which is another subject for another day. But nonetheless, it's like the fact is that the only constant in the universe is change. And you can't go back, no matter how badly you want to go back. And the other, I'm going to call it a dichotomy from that particular mindset, is that there's also the belief in all of the various, we'll call them prophecies, okay, about the way things are supposed to go, the God's plan, by the way, God being male in this instance, and they talk about, on their various programs, even to this day, but even back then, about how our society is going to hell in a handbasket. As if they're surprised. It's, wait a minute, you believe in these prophecies, and yet you're railing against society for what it's doing, when this is all part of what you believe this is supposed to happen. That's the thing that really gets me, that it's like, you're the one that laid out the roadmap. I don't necessarily believe in those prophecies. I think that this is sort of the, whether it's for better or worse, this is just the evolutionary process that the human being living a spiritual being living a human experience. This is just what we're going through. Hopefully the majority of us will learn, as they say, learning from history. If you don't, you're doomed to repeat it. But I've even heard that with what we're going through here in this country alone with, and I'll just keep it generic as I can, the polarity that we are experiencing right now. And the fact that it seems as though, from, again, this is my observation, mind you, there are people who, they're not making any sense. What they're accepting as truth, what they're accepting as reality, it's like, I don't know what world you're living in, because I don't see that. It's kind of what you just said about how beautiful this place is. Yes, there's room for improvement, but this is still a fantastic place. Talk to us about, I know I put a lot on the table there.
Well, yes, it is a beautiful place to, you know, when we believe everything is sacred, when the, you know, the trees and the rocks and are sacred, we treat the world differently. When we honor the beauty, we build our buildings differently. You know, people are suffering from that. And yes, I believe the world is quite delusional right now. And part of that, you know, I think why people are going down the conspiracy rat hole of whatever it is. And, you know, some will say that's conspiracy and some won't. But it's because we are hungry for a good story. Now, there's a difference between a prophecy that says, well, this is going to happen. A savior is going to come and save us. And you don't have to do anything. You can sit there and twiddle your thumbs. This evolutionary moment is about having us all wake up and take part in the co-creation of our world. And we co-create it with each other, men and women together. We co-create it with divine, however you define that to be. But I say that if we define it as masculine, we need a feminine to go with it. And when we have a story that tells us how to live, that gives us values, that says, here's what we're here to create together, that's different than a prophecy. A prophecy is you don't have to do anything and somebody's going to come along and save you. A story is here's how we work together. And the story I see is that we're here to give birth to a new age. And that age is learning how to create heaven on earth, not go up to heaven and leave the earth, but to bring heaven down to the earth. In fact, a friend of mine says, we don't need to raise hell to change the world. We just need to lower heaven.
I love that. That also sounds like a great line in a country song, too. Of course, now you got to somehow incorporate motherhood and a truck in there somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I got another line for you, that a religion without a goddess is halfway to atheism.
I would tend to agree with you. Anodea Judith is my guest. AnodeaJudith.com. That's spelled AnodeaJudith.com. We'll be linked to that website. As we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and this to me it's a fascinating subject. I hope that you folks are enjoying it. I will also tell you, Anodea, that some years ago, and actually, I think it was about 10 years ago, actually, in 2014, I met a gentleman by the name of Will Lynn, and he was studying for his doctorate in mythology. So we talked about doing a series of programs, which are, of course, available in the podcast form, called Mythosophia, Exploring the Depths of Myth and Wisdom. Now, I'm familiar with many of the gods, you know, and Thor and Zeus and on and on and on. Prometheus is probably one of my favorite because of what he brought. And he didn't just bring fire. Okay. But as we were doing this series of programs over the course of the next couple of 3 years, the one thing that struck me as he would choose the subjects was how diverse, how broad the subject was. And we did go into, we had a couple of guests on talking about the goddess, if you will. And it just blew me away. What was real interesting is when the series was over, as we ended that particular year, I heard the story. I'd heard it before, but it resonated more so about Christmas in the trenches, if you will. That time during World War I when the two sides stopped at Christmas Eve. And I'm still perplexed at how in the world they ever started again. It's like, seriously?
Yeah.
You had this incredible moment. And then you go right back into the same mindset prior to that moment. It's like, wow. But what I found, what was so interesting was that mythology, there was even the reference to, there was some mythology even in that story. I mean, not so much that the facts weren't true. One thing in particular was that they played a soccer game. But they don't know who won. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think it really matters. I was actually able to participate in an onstage performance of a scene in that where I am approaching the German soldier in this particular performance who's holding a Christmas tree. And my lines are one by one, they entered no man's land. No guns or bayonets and so forth. They exchanged some whiskey, if you will, and other things of this nature. And they wished each other well. And the final line is, and in that soccer game, we gave them hell, you know, kind of thing. And I'm delivering this and I've got tears. I was so into that moment thinking, this is wrong. I mean, what happens after was so wrong. Why didn't they just say, you know what, we're going to just walk off and we're going to go live our lives and get back with our mates and so forth and our families? But it seems as though, as much as we would have liked to have learned from that, we haven't. There's a line in the song, The Green Fields of France. This man is sitting at the tombstone of Willie McBride and says basically, so you think that you and your comrades, you were going to end the war to end all wars? I hate to be the bearer of bad news. You died in vain because it's happened again and again and again and again and again. But it's this these kinds of stories that take on almost bigger than life. And
well, we have to go back in history and look at where that began.
Okay.
You know, in the early civilizations that were spreading and population was growing, and as they ran into the boundaries of water and food, or a mountain was there, or there was the sea, or there was the desert, they started fighting over resources. Mm. And you can imagine that when that fighting started, that the men would pick up their clubs or their, you know, they didn't have swords yet when this began, but, you know, their weapons of whatever. They would tell the women who probably were pregnant or had young babies at the breast to go hide and be safe. And the men would pick up and become the warriors to protect their tribe. That's kind of a natural assumption. And in that, a tribe only had to get, you know, beat up once to say, well, next time these fellows are coming, we're going to be ready. We're going to train our brothers and sons. We're going to create more weapons. And thus the world starts to become militarized.
Mm.
And as that expanded and men were taken away from their homesteads, away from their wives and children for months at a time to, you know, battle with primitive medicines if they got hurt, you know, they didn't have the medicines we have today, to uncertain food, traveling, you know, real hardship. They couldn't even afford to long for their women because that would be a danger to the mission. So there was more separation between men and women. And to keep men under this illusion that this war is a good thing and that it's a noble thing, they had to masculinize violence. And that's been fed to men, to their pain, to their suffering, to millions of men being killed as soldiers, that, you know, sometimes the most masculine moment for a young boy is getting a gun from his father for Christmas and going out hunting together. And that's the male bonding. And, mm-hmm. you know, the movies over and over again, even today, you know, show the men as masculine because they're holding a gun. So violence has become masculinized. It's not men's fault. I don't think men are naturally more violent than women. I think it's been fed to them. It's been conditioned to them by the culture. And what we know is that when women are part of the peace process, the peace lasts longer. It's more accepted by the people. She's more able to see both sides and get them to talk to each other. But women aren't allowed to be part of the peace process very often. There's only one woman in the history of the world that has signed an international peace treaty, and only 9 women out of some 85 or something that have gotten a Nobel Peace Prize. So women are typically, because, oh, well, this is a war, this is a masculine thing, women don't have anything to offer. Well, yes, they do. And they represent peace. You know, there's an old story from the Greeks during the Trojan War, where the women of both sides were quite sick of the war and losing their sons and husbands. And they got together and said, what can we do about this? And they decided to have a sexual strike, and that they made a pact on both sides that none of the women were going to have sex with their men until they put down their weapons and came back home. And of course, it's just a play by Aristophanes, but, you know, it demonstrates that women are wanting peace. They raise the children. They don't want to lose their sons to war. So if we want peace in this world, we need to let women be part of the political process. We need to let women be more influencing and be part of the peace process.
Anadeya Judith, my guest here on the program, I find it interesting too, Anadeya, that in the I've heard it kind of framed in this light, that if a male is up at the podium in a position of a leadership and power, and they pound their fist on the podium to show emphasis, they are seen as a strong leader, you know, in that respect. If a woman gets up to that same podium in a position of leadership and power and she does exactly the same thing, she's hysterical.
That's right.
And it's like, you have got to be kidding me. Seriously? What about how is this book, Goddess, your, shall we say, education in the goddess, which I'm curious about as well, but get to this question first. How are you able to use this, and have you been able to use this to where, I'm not going to say you have changed people's minds, but people have chosen to look much harder and closer at all of this that you're talking about, to where they say, you know what? And this is my term here. You just burned down another half a dozen of my straw huts of belief. And I have said this on many occasions, you know what? Burn them all down. I don't care. I'm here to learn. But tell us about how that process has worked in your experience over the years that you have been.
Well, let me tell you about my aha moment with this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was raised in a Christian family. God was a he. That was never questioned. You know, one time I asked my mother about it and she said, oh, honey, that refers to everybody, you know, and just accept it. And I didn't think too much about it. It didn't occur to me to question it until in ninth grade, we were studying ancient history and I read Edith Hamilton's mythology. You know, you talk about doing your mythology series. And I learned that once upon a time, there were gods, many gods and goddesses. And that was a revelation to me that the story we had been told was not the whole story. So I began my research way back then into ancient history, into what happened. What happened to the goddess? What was life like back then? And I'm not suggesting that we go back to an ancient culture and live that way any more than an adult can go back to the mother and breastfeed. You know, we have been maturing, but it's picking up the thread from there because that's our roots. And a plant cannot grow when its roots are cut off. And so we want to bring the roots back so that we can grow from there. So that was an aha moment for me that once upon a time there were goddesses. And I looked at what happened and I looked at the systematic suppression of the goddess religions and the, you know, knocking down the temples to today, there's nothing that isn't in ruins, to beheading the statues, to destroying the beautiful art of the classical period, destroying all the literature, killing the priestesses, burning women at the stake, you know, until it was not even safe to utter the name of the goddess. And it was so wiped out from our culture that me, as a little girl, didn't even think to question it, why God was a he. And if God was male, then the male is God. And where does that leave women? And where does that leave the world? That leaves the world in an unbalanced state. And in fact, you know, when I say the goddess, a religion without a goddess is halfway to atheism, the word atheist was first used in the Roman Empire for the Christians because they didn't believe in the gods. And they were atheists. A means against, so they were against God. Theism is that the divine is within everything. It's not some abstract, distant figure sitting on a throne. It's in the trees, it's in the animals, it's in the flowers, in the fields, in the crops, in you and me. Mm. And it's in everything. That's the theism. So atheists are against the divine. And it was first used for the Christians.
I find that interesting, too, because even the word Christian, though it was probably originally used by the Romans in their language, was a derogatory. It was as bad as the N-word is today, if you will. And yet they took it on. I find that fascinating as well. And I've also found, too, because I've had atheists on this program, that they're some of the most spiritual people. They have a set of values and morals. I think every human being does, which raises the question, we're at 1.8 billion souls on this planet right now, roughly. Would you say that the majority of them who are not involved in a lot of these conflicts and skirmishes and so forth, and they just want to live their lives and provide for their families in whatever way they see fit and live in peace. Greg Braden once said that if we were to get, I think it was at the time, maybe 100,000 souls on the planet to shift their consciousness and start sort of putting that out into the ethers, if you will, we could change the world. And I'm sitting here thinking, 8.1 billion people, and there aren't 100,000 souls that aren't doing that. And at the same time, I kind of get the feeling, because I'm an optimist, I would take it you are too, but I get the feeling that they are doing that, that what we're seeing, because we're so connected these days with our screens and all of that, that it looks like the majority are just going completely bonkers, when in fact it's the minority of the population. Is that your observation as well?
Absolutely. You know, as I travel around and I've taught all over the world, people are waking up everywhere. People are coming into consciousness. They're taking on meditation practices and yoga and peaceful mediation and, you know, all kinds of things. They're doing their therapy work. They're waking up. It doesn't make the news because the human brain is attracted to conflict. Because it doesn't like inconsistency. It wants to solve that conflict. So the news media knows that if an issue is presented from a point of view of conflict, that it will get the bites, it will get the clicks. But that is just giving us this sense that the world is so more polarized than it actually is. And if you take these two polarities and you actually sit around the kitchen table and have a discussion, people are more the same than they are different. They're more in agreement that they are different. But we are sold into being these polarities in order to keep that engine of conflict going, because it makes money for people. And we have to realize that is the minority, as you say. The majority is waking up. It's just the minority has a louder voice.
Yeah. My brother and I had a very...
William Butler Yeats poem that said, you know, at the time when things unfold, the worst are filled with a passionate intensity, while the best are lack all conviction. So the best are the quiet ones, and the worst are, you know, have that, they're the loudest, but they are not the majority.
Well, my brother and I had an interesting conversation following my sister's memorial 2 years ago, and we're on opposite sides of the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. But one of the commitments that I made to myself as that conversation began was, he isn't right or wrong, yet I'm not right or wrong. And he, regardless, or even because of where he is at, he's still my brother. You know, and yet I have, and I know you have too, heard all of the stories of couples and families just being torn asunder because they choose their ideology over family, over community. Is Goddess, the book in particular, but The Goddess, here to sort of repair that damage, bring people together?
Yes, absolutely. The Goddess really was the interconnection of everything, and brings us back into a kind of unity that we have lost. Because when the male separated from the female and the male got masculinized into violence, albeit for protection of their people, I mean, mm-hmm. there's a noble cause to it that the men have rallied to. Let's give the men credit for that. But when they got separated, then there was conflict even between the male and the female. And as more resources were put into the military, everything having to do with the home was, you know, diminished. And so people's, you know, day-to-day lives, like you say, most people just want to raise their families, be free to live, live in peace, to develop as they will. They don't want to be part of this conflict. They don't want to be part of this fight. And so the Goddess was a connecting factor to communities. and people came together. And, you know, let me say this, that, you know, the goddess is not God in drag or Jehovah in a skirt. And she represents a different face of the divine. It's celebration. It's not being austere and rigid and dressing in black colors. It's color and music and dancing and joy and laughter. It's pleasure. It's sacred sexuality. It's many things that we have lost in this world that bring enjoyment. And when people are happy, they don't want to fight.
I find it interesting, too, that I have been... I guess the correct word is manipulated by our society, even though as a kid, I recognized the form of manipulation within the media, even though we only had three channels back then, and said, no, I'm not going to allow myself to be suckered into that. I'm not going to buy into the manipulation. And I know that I have been, maybe not to a greater degree, but I recognize that's going on. But I'm not buying into all of the conspiracy theories, whether it's today or yesteryear, and so on and so forth. My heart goes out to those who think that by choosing to fight this quote-unquote noble cause, it's like, it's kind of that line in that song, The Green Fields of France. You really think that what you're doing is going to end this? It's not until we all decide. I mean, I would love to see this happen kind of like it did back in World War I, where the men and women, now there are women fighting too. You know what? This is stupid. This is just plain stupid, but it has to happen on both sides. Or the masses, and I mean literally the 8.1 billion minus the ones who are calling the shots, finally say, they throw up their hands and say, enough is enough. We're done with this. We're not going to play this game anymore. And what really hurts me is, this is my observation, the loss of incredible potential. What could those individuals have contributed to the growth and advancement of our society?
Exactly.
You know, I just, you know, it's like, Even if all they did was raise their families, it's like my father did not believe. I hope he did near the end, but my father shared that he didn't believe that he had really any real part in informing us as people. When his memorial could have been labeled, this would have been the title of the memorial. And we didn't choreograph this either. Dad, we are who we are because you were in our lives. But he did not feel that. He thought my mom was the one. And it's like, wow, how? Because I'm quoting my dad all the time. You know? We're talking about Goddess, the book Goddess, and it's available, I'm sure, at Amazon and also through your website, which is Anadea Judith. .com, AnadeaJudith.com. And we certainly are glad that you are bringing this to light. I know that you're not the first one. One of the things that has always struck me as frustrating because of the lack of respect and appreciation and honor to the females on the planet, let alone the feminine, is that in spite of what history supposedly has shown us, I like the breakdown there, his story. Where's her story? The first person to recognize who the Messiah was following, and as you and I are conversing, we're heading into we're in the Easter season, as it were, who recognized who the Messiah was following the resurrection was not Peter. It wasn't any of the males. They were all stumbling around going, when they came across him, basically, and I paraphrase, could you show us to the nearest pub? We need to drown our sorrows. She, on the other hand, knew exactly who he was. Matter of fact, she went out to touch his garment. I put it this way. The paint wasn't quite dry. She says, don't touch. The paint's not dry yet. But she knew exactly who he was. She should have been, if you will, the first pope. But obviously back then the female was not going to, you know, secure that kind of a position. And I always found that really kind of strange that it's like, does nobody else see this? They left this in the writings. And does nobody else see this? You know,
this is part of that systematic suppression of women, of women in power, of the goddess religion, of the feminine, that the masculine was defined by everything not feminine. So therefore, the feminine had to be repressed for men to feel like men. And this was also the repression of females and their contribution. And we've lost that contribution and we're not playing with a full deck.
I love that. Well, we can certainly start getting the cards back by picking up a copy of Goddess and going to AnadeaJudith.com. I have three final questions that I ask all of my guests, and I'm going to ask those of you as well. But I, firstly, I want to thank you for not only writing this book and putting this together. This is actually a part of a series. I think that it's referred to as the Common Sentience.
Yes,
it's a mystical book series, and we're really happy through a particular publisher that I have been connected with other series, and this is, to me, it's fascinating, and I thank you for being a part of it and a part of this program.
Yeah, and this was Ariel Patricia's vision and her baby to produce this Common Sentience. The Goddess book is the 14th in that series. And as many topics of shamanism and angels and sound healing and many different topics that people can learn about.
Well, before I ask you those three final questions, I want to thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We are here on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., Wednesdays at 9 a.m., and Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m. We'll give you 9 opportunities. We're streaming live at those times at richarddugan.com. And the podcasts are on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and many other locations. We're also on YouTube where you can watch these conversations. And I hope you'll subscribe and click notifications so that when a new conversation is posted, you'll be notified and you can tune into it. We also ask that if you can support us financially, we would be gratefully appreciative. We have a PayPal account. It's there for your security as well as ours. And we ask that whatever you can give, use the email richard@richarddugan.com when it asks for it. And we thank you, thank you, thank you in advance for what you will help us with. And we thank those who have helped us in the past. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We also ask that you take time to go within and listen to that still small voice in that quiet, peaceful, calm place. And that's an area that was just briefly touched upon, meditation, in this program, which I think is a real key to all of this. And we'll have you back to talk more about that as well. Thank you again for sharing that with us. We would like to ask you those three final questions, as we always do to all of our guests. And the first is, who is Anadea Judith?
Ah, well, she is a servant of the goddess. She is a creatrix. She is a mother. She is a priestess, a writer, a teacher, a healer. I've been many, many things, an artist. I am really, one of the first goddesses I ever knew was Sarasvati, patroness of the 64 arts. So I write, I paint, I play music, I garden, I teach, I do drama. So I'm really a creatrix.
Mm. What is it that gets you up in the morning?
Ah, life itself is just a glory. I feel so privileged to be here. Some people say, I wish I was on the other side or something. No, I said, I love being an earthling. I love being in this body. I love what can be created. So I love the creative process. So I get up in the morning to say, what can I create today?
And finally, what was your best day?
My best day. Oh my goodness. That's a hard one. Woo. I just have so many. I think maybe skiing in the Dolomite Mountains was one of my best days. Or hiking and even in the Dolomites. You know, giving birth to my son was one of my best days. Speaking to 20,000 people in India, giving a lecture, that was one of my best days. There's been a lot of them. It's hard to choose.
I hear you. Well, once again, thank you so much for joining us, Anadeya Judith, anadeyajudith.com. We'll be linked to your website as well. And we really do appreciate this time, and we really would like to have you back again to continue this conversation.
Great. Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you all for listening.
And I thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story. And until our next broadcast, podcast, videocast, love to Lal. Jeanette, I am still listening. Dad, continue to be happy because I am. Smokey, I will see you on the other side. And to my dear friend Zorro, aho, aho.